Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning, and thanks for joining me on The Garden Show. We're talking gardening, and we'll be looking at what's going on outside in your gardens and yard and landscape for the next couple of hours. A great time to think about what you see going on, and if you have some issues, problems, or questions, get some information you need, and make sure you get a job done right, or make sure a problem is diagnosed properly before you tackle it. Make sure you don't waste the time doing something that you don't need to be doing this time of the year. So whether you have a question about a pest problem, whether it's insects or diseases or weeds, whether you have a question about timing, what can we do in this incredible intense heat this time of the year, or what you can plant or not plant, if it's a question you've got on any of those topics, or even anything else. I always say, if it's green and growing, I'm here to get you the information you need. That phone number, once again, is 504-260-1870. Of course, the big news is the heat. And we're no strangers to heat in our climate. We have all kinds of high temperatures all summer long. Beginning in May, we start seeing the 90s in mid to late May, usually. And we see 90s all the way through September. Sometimes even October can be warm and muggy, and we feel really cheesy because October is one of our good months of the year. But right now, the intense heat that we have in our area is really, really debilitating. So y'all do take care when you are out. Try to get your work done as early in the morning as you can, or later on in the afternoon as the sun is going down. Try to hit some of those cooler times of the day. But when we use the word cooler, it's really a stretch, because there is no cool time of the day this time of the year. When you wake up in the morning and it's already 80 degrees with a high humidity and a heat index in the 90s, there's just no relief. So do be careful when you're outside. We have so much humidity. Our amazing bodies have the ability to sweat, and the sweat evaporates and it cools us down. It's a marvelous cooling system that humans have, but it doesn't work well down here. The humidity is so high that when we sweat, it just sits there on our skin and soaks our clothes. It drips in our eyes and in our mouths, and it just doesn't do the good that it should be doing for us because of the humidity. And so for us, 100 degrees when the humidity is low still feels very hot, but at least your body's cooling system is helping you out. You know, when it's 90 degrees and the humidity is very high, it can feel even hotter and more uncomfortable because our cooling system that works so well in low humidity doesn't work at all well in high humidity. So y'all take care of yourselves. In particular, if you're going to be going outside, drink a bunch of water before you go outside. Just make it a habit to drink a nice big old glass full of water before, even if you're not thirsty, just drink it before you go outside. We lose moisture so rapidly as our bodies continuously try to sweat, wondering why it's not doing any good. The sweat just pours out of us, and we lose water very quickly. So in working outside this time of the year, do keep in mind that the heat is a health issue. It's not just uncomfortable anymore. It's a real health issue, and take that under advisement when you're outside. Plants, you know, nobody likes it this hot. Nobody likes it this hot. Not your lawn, not your trees, not your shrubs, not your flowers, not your vegetables. Even vegetables that like heat, like okra, I wouldn't say Okra loves it when it starts hitting the upper 90s. It's just something that heat-tolerant plants can get through very easily. They don't seem to mind that much. But almost everything is stressed out to some degree. Watch your watering. Plants are under stress right now, and if you water them too much, you can cause root rot, particularly on newly planted trees and shrubs, bedding plants, even vegetables. So do watch your watering. It is possible for you to overcompensate and think, oh, it's so hot, I'm going to have to water a whole lot. Keeping the soil wet or damp even over extended periods, either from your efforts to irrigate or those efforts combined with natural rainfall, can be very destructive. So do watch it. It is entirely possible to water too much, water too often, and create all kinds of problems. So water when it's necessary. Water when you see the ground is dry. Or feel when the ground is dry. Sometimes you may stand on your porch and look out over your yard and say, I wonder if I need to water. It's been so dry. And you stand there on the porch as if you can tell standing on the porch how dry the soil actually is. Well, get off the porch, grab a trowel, and go dig in a few beds. If it's dry, you'll see that the soil is really dry. You may dig in some beds and say, wow, it's damper than I thought it was. I think I'll put off irrigating for a few days. So try to be as aware as possible. Don't just sort of, you know, do something because you kind of think you maybe should. Do something because you've checked it out, you've seen the soil is dry, or you see early signs of drought stress in some of your plants. A great indicator that you need to water is to keep a sharp eye out for any signs of slight drought stress and water when you begin to see it. So don't forget, it is possible to water too much and kill your plants. Whereas if you wait longer and the plants wilt a little bit and then you water, they'll perk right back up again. So really keep in mind that it is better to water too little than to water excessively and create all the problems that root rot can bring into your landscape. Have a caller today early on. Sally has called in from Covington. So let's head to the phone. Sally, good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
What can I do for you?
I have four beautiful Acoma trees that I planted last year in the front of my home, and they bloom magnificently this year, but they now have that Cytospora disease.
You're trying to say Cercospora, I think.
Okay, well, the problem I'm having is there's a bird nest in the tree, cardinals, and their eggs, and so if I don't know what to do about that, I don't think I want to do anything because until those birds leave, and then would it be too late to treat it? I'm just not quite sure how to handle all this.
Well, I'm glad you called, Sally. Cercospora leaf spot is the most common disease of crepe myrtles. It's a leaf spot disease caused by a fungus. The spores drift in the air. If they find wet leaves and land on those, they're able then to sprout and cause infection. So the rainier the weather, the more likely we are to see Cercospora leaf spot. The Cercospora leaf spot you see occurring now is due to the rainy weather we had about 10 to 14 days ago. The disease has already happened. The leaf spots that you see are already there. So spraying at this point isn't going to do the tree any good. By the time you see the symptoms, it's really too late for a fungicide to do any good. Fungicides really are more preventative than curative. So you can, without any guilty feelings whatsoever, say, well, it won't do any good to spray now anyway. I don't want to spray because of the birds, so we're all going to be all right. But what's going to happen to my poor crepe myrtle if I don't spray it? Nothing. Crepe myrtles get Cercospora leaf spot every year. You're going to see this leaf spot disease and the leaf drop that it causes show up every year, Sally. Acoma has moderate resistance to Cercospora leaf spot, and it will get over it and the tree will be fine even if you do absolutely nothing. The most I'd recommend you do is make sure you rake up those fallen leaves, the fungus is still on them, and bag them up and dispose of them. That'll take away a source of infection that might create outbreaks later on. And Cercospora is active all summer. So spraying right now won't do anything to stop Cercospora in August or September. So the bottom line now is don't spray, monitor the tree, and let the cardinals finish their life cycle and move on. If in late summer we have a rainy period and you want to prevent Cercospora leaf spot, you can spray your tree right after the rain stops, before you see the spots, before you know the disease is there. Spray the tree right after the rainy period is over, and that will help protect the foliage from the disease. A fungicide called Daconil, D-A-C-O-N-I-L, Daconil, or anything that has chlorothalonil in it will work really well. But again, once you see the spots, it's the barn door is open and the horses are already gone.
Just one quick question on that. So as a preventive, even though it's got the disease right now, are you indicating that it will subside, and then if there is an outbreak of rain in next month, I should say?
Cercospora occurs all summer long. So okay. This outbreak that you have now, all the infected leaves will fall off, and the crape myrtle is probably going to send out more leaves to replace what it lost. Later on, a rainy period, more Cercospora leaf spot can occur. Now, Sally, do you notice you never see people out spraying crape myrtles, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's because most of us don't. The trees tolerate the disease pretty well, and that's because they just drop their leaves and move on. So this is not a matter of life or death. This is a matter that if you don't spray, you're not being a good owner. Nobody sprays for Cercospora leaf spot.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Sally, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. All right, folks, stay tuned. Going to take a break, and then we'll be right back with more of The Garden Show. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got a gardening question, just give me a call in. We're going to head right to the phones. We've got David calling in from Mississippi. David, good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Gill. I had a beautiful stand of Bermuda grass over 3 acres, and all of a sudden, hay and all kinds of trash grass started moving in. Is there anything I can spray this time of year to go ahead and take care of that?
Yeah, you know, we do have to be careful because a lot of the more commonly used herbicides may be more likely to damage the lawn grass when it's really intensely hot like this. There is a lawn weed killer, however, that doesn't have a temperature limitation that we can use during the summer, and it's called metsulfuron. It's a metsulfuron. And look for a brand name called Top Shot, T-O-P-S-H-O-T. Mm-hmm. That's the homeowner brand for your typical gardener. And you can either find that at your local nurseries or garden centers or feed and seed stores. And if you don't see it there, you can always get it online. That has a label for use on all the different kinds of lawn grasses that we grow, Bermuda, St. Augustine, Zoysia, and centipede. And it has a wide label to control a wide variety of weeds. Indeed, it's considered about the best herbicide we have for Virginia buttonweed control. And all of you out there that have had Virginia buttonweed problems in the past, it's there. So you might want to think about putting Top Shot out on your lawn now. Put out an application following label directions, and then follow that up, if necessary, David, with the second application. Sometimes two applications are far more effective than just one. So sometimes people throw their hands up if they don't get perfect control with the first application and never think about making another one. But do feel free to follow up, and that usually does a great job. That ought to help you out tremendously. Now, identifying the weeds is helpful. There may be some weeds that you have that aren't on the label for Top Shot, but it has a wide variety of weeds that it controls.
All right, so the chemical that I'm looking for is metsulfuron, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gill. Appreciate you.
David, it's just Dan. I don't have a doctorate. You take care.
You're a doctor of weeds, though. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call. All righty. Let's head over to Hammond and talk to Steve. Good morning, Steve. You're on The Garden Show.
Hey, Dan. Not sure if Doctor of Weed would be a good moniker for you, but so be it.
I'll take it.
I've got a 3-year-old satsuma tree that has about 10 branches that are all the diameter of maybe like a Crayola marker that are, it's the first year it's been producing for us, and the limbs are bending down pretty dramatically. And I was just wondering, would it help the tree, and also would it help raise the canopy? I've noticed that most fruit trees like the Satsuma and Tangerine, the canopy of the tree is so low. Would it help if I staked the limbs up with some bamboo or something, gently, nothing, you know, dramatic, but
it would. And Steve, okay. this is early in the season. Those Satsuma's going to get bigger and heavier on that okay. young tree. And young trees have trouble. This is a function of young age, Steve, not of an issue or a problem. It's just your little tree is really trying to produce too early when it's not structurally strong enough. So that's okay. On the third year, we'll let a tree set what it wants to. But you do want to prop those branches up. You can tie them to a stake like a bamboo stake. You could take a board, cut a notch in the end of it, pad it with an old rag or something, and then just shove that board up underneath the branch and wedge it up down in the ground. You can tie branches that bend in opposite directions, you can tie them together with a piece of rope so that each of them support each other. There are a variety of ways that you can support the Satsuma. Branches can break on these trees, so by all means, do some support for that tree, and it'll appreciate it. But this is just because it's so young.
Yep, well, and I remember a couple of years ago you saying, you know, to don't allow it to produce fruit the first couple of years. So we had been ripping the blooms off.
Very good. You did well, and the tree's rewarding you with a little fruit this year. Next year it may skip it. You know, next year it may not make anything. So you know it's still in that establishment phase. But look, you take care. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, Dan.
All righty, folks. We're going to take a moment here and catch all up with the latest breaking news with the CBS News Update. And then after we have this break, we'll be back with more gardening questions right here on The Garden Show. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and do feel free to call in with your gardening question if I can help you out. That number again is 504-260-1870. Up right now on the phone, Justin, calling in from Bell Chase. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, Dan. I have a 3 or 4 year old swamp maple or red maple tree in my backyard, and we're putting in a pool, and we're wondering if this tree would cause any damage in the future to the decking of the pool or plumbing of the pool, like a live oak causes.
Not as likely, because the maple root system isn't as large and gnarly as the live oak root system is over time. How far away is the tree from the pool?
From the actual water line, probably around 8 to 10 feet.
That's close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's close. You don't want a deciduous tree like a maple dropping trash in your pool all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I would say that tree is not in a good location. Now, although it might have been 3 years ago, now it's not in a good location for the landscape as you have reimagined it with the pool. And so you have a choice. You can remove the tree and find you another one and plant it someplace more appropriate to provide the shade that I imagine you wanted that tree to provide for you.
Yeah.
Or you could try to dig that tree up. 3 years is a while to be in the ground. But during the winter in December or January, if you were up to giving it a try, the tree is not too big, you could try to move it or have it moved for you by one of the professional tree companies. But that is close. That's close to the apron around your pool, and it's going to be really a trashy mess with what it drops in the pool for you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what we were thinking. We're just, you know, with all the live oaks in New Orleans, we're wondering if it would cause any damage in the future as well.
Yeah, we love trees, Justin. We all do. Yeah. And we don't take, making decisions like this lightly. Trees are precious to us.
Right.
But things have changed dramatically with the pool. And if the tree's not suitable where it is anymore and it doesn't sound like it is, then you need to make that change.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the advice.
Sure thing, Justin. Let's see about Henry. Henry's calling in from Thibodaux. Good morning, Henry. What can I do for you?
Good morning, Dan. My question is, I have a raised box garden. Tomatoes are finished. The cucumbers are about done. They're coming to the end. I want to close this thing up for the winter and reuse it next spring. What should I do? Cover it? Leave it open? What type of cover to put on?
I'm glad you're checking. When you're through with your garden, and you know, really, Henry, don't forget, we can do a great cool season vegetable garden. There ain't no reason to put that garden to bed until next spring. You miss out on all the fabulous crops we can grow between October and April. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, turnip greens, mustard greens, carrots, radishes, rutabagas. Collards, I mean, on and on and on. Some of our favorite vegetables can only be grown here during the cool season. So I'm just going to say that you have every right to put it to bed till next spring, but don't overlook the amazing cool season vegetable garden. And it's so nice to garden that time of the year. It's cool, and we don't have any insect or disease problems during the winter season. So think about that. Now, after having said that, if you're putting your garden to bed for now, absolutely clear it out of everything, all the debris, all the vegetable debris, all the weeds, anything that might be in that, down to bare soil. You can do a variety of things. You could cover that soil then with cardboard and then put a few inches of mulch on top of that. That's a great way to put a garden to bed. Or just put a really thick layer, maybe 6 inches thick, of leaves and grass clippings and pine straw, whatever you have on hand, and really cover that soil deeply. A third variation is to use newspaper. You open up a section of newspaper. You want it to be about a quarter of an inch thick. Lay that newspaper out over the garden, and then cover that with an organic mulch like leaves or pine straw, and that's another good way. But you absolutely do not want to simply leave it open. It will become horribly infested with weedy growth, and you'll have a mess on your hands when you try to start that garden up again. You put it to bed properly, then all you have to do is pull the cover off of it. You've got a nice blank slate ready to be prepared for the next growing season, and you're ready to go.
Okay. For the last 3 months, I've been working at home. I've got to get out and start doing a little traveling. That's why I didn't want to put in any type of winter plants. But now I got one more question. A couple of months ago, you had a show, you talked about Virginia weed, and you talked about sticker grass. Now, I know there wasn't much I could do, you know, last year, but I understand I'm going to have to deal with that pretty soon. Can you help me out on that?
Sure. For Virginia buttonweed, it's actively growing right now in your lawn. So if you have problems with Virginia buttonweed, you remember last year in late summer, you had a real issue with it. It's already there growing. You might not notice it, but it's already there, and I'd recommend you go ahead and treat. I mentioned Top Shot earlier. That would be a great product for you to use. The sticker weed is gone. It's all seeds right now, and they won't start germinating until the fall. We usually put out a weed preventer in late September or early October at the latest. So any of the weed preventers, these are granular products. You spread them out like fertilizer, and they create a layer of herbicide that stops the seeds from successfully germinating and prevents the sticker weed from showing up. I would recommend you evaluate your lawn in January or February and look for that little fine, ferny growth of the sticker weed to see if some of it may have come up anyway. And if so, you could use Weed Be Gone, Weed Free Zone, any of those common lawn weed killers, and apply it in January or February to kill off any plants that might have come up despite your pre-emergence of application in late September, early October.
Okay, so I should use the Top Shot now?
Absolutely.
Use the Top Shot now, then come January, February, use something like Weed Be Gone or something like that.
Yeah, now if you have Top Shot left over, feel free to use Top Shot then.
Okay, use it then. All right, that takes care of me.
Thanks, Henry.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. All righty. Let's see, we got Andy up next. Andy is calling in from La Place. Andy, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Dan. I have a magnolia tree I planted about 12 years ago in a front yard, and it has a massive root system, which I'm worried about it attacking my sewer line. It's been a good tree as far as shade for the house, And I'm wondering if I could either cut it way back and have it grow back up or replace it with a tree that had a less invasive root system.
What makes you think the magnolia has an invasive root system?
Well, I can see it all over the yard. I can't even dig in my garden anymore.
So, Andy, if it's up on the surface, why are you worried about something deep in the ground?
I thought one indicated the other.
Well, the root system of trees are relatively shallow, Andy. The majority of the root system is in the upper 12 inches of the soil. Now, roots do not attack pipes. People have this idea that tree roots are out there just searching and looking for any pipe they can find and wrap around and damage. The trees don't know pipes are there. The roots have no sensory organs. They have no idea that there's a pipe several feet underground. What happens with sewer pipes on occasion is they leak. The pipe leaks, not the roots. The pipe is at fault, and the pipe leaks water and mineral nutrients. Sewage is rich in mineral nutrients. And that moist, fertile area attracts the roots. The roots will grow better in that situation. They will grow down in that direction. And if they find a crack in the pipe, they may actually penetrate the pipe and get inside of it. That's the pipe's fault. That's not the root's fault. That's the pipe's fault. If you're not having these sewer problems, then I would just relax. If someday in the future you begin to have lots of sewer problems and the plumber tells you there's a massive root problem in this, then any tree in the vicinity of that pipe would be suspect. And at that point, then, if it gets bad enough, you may want to remove the tree and stop the roots from growing into the pipe anymore. But I would not be overly concerned at this point.
Okay, sounds good. Do you think it's about 30 feet tall? Do you think it's good for me to top this tree at all?
No, Andy, you planted a magnolia tree. That's how they grow, Andy.
It's beautiful, and it's given us
that's
a lot of shade.
That's like buying a Great Dane and saying, Dan, if I cut the legs off this Great Dane, I'll have a much shorter dog. Do you think I should do that? Well, why did you get a Great Dane? So leave the tree alone. Topping a tree is unhealthy for the tree, causes all kinds of issues and problems. It's fine, Andy. I would just relax.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. I sure appreciate it.
You should welcome, Andy. Thanks for the call. All righty. We've got Yvonne calling in from Metairie. Yvonne, you're the next caller up. What can I do for you?
Hi. I'm sorry. I was in the middle of making biscuits.
Oh. What you got, Yvonne? Hello? All right. Who's up next? Let's talk to Craig, calling in from Baton Rouge. Craig, good morning.
Good morning. What is the best time to prune a crepe myrtle? I planted them about 3 or 4 months ago. They're in a bushy form. I want to make a tree out of them.
Well, you don't want to prune them their first year in the ground, Craig. They need all their foliage to help them settle in and get established. So you will definitely want to train that tree and lift the canopy to the height you want it to be, but you don't want to start doing it this year. I would leave well enough alone. The best time to prune the trees is in late winter, early spring, when they are leafless. And that way you can see the structure of the tree clearly, and you don't want to take off too many branches at one time. So take off maybe one or two of the lower branches. Use your best judgment this year, this coming winter, in January, okay. February, March. And then as the years go by, gradually take off more and more of the lower branches and raise that canopy up to the height you want it to be. So don't say, well, I want it to be, you know, 8 feet off the ground. You cut everything off 8 feet and lower, leave the tree at the top knot. Do it gradually over time. As the tree grows taller, you can take off those lower branches. And again, the time to do that would be late winter, early spring, when the tree is leafless and you can see the structure without the foliage on it.
Gotcha. Thank you, sir.
All right, Craig. Appreciate the call. All righty, folks, we'll take a break and hear from some of the fine sponsors that make this show possible. But don't you go away. We'll be back with lots more of The Garden Show.
Good morning.
We're talking gardening and going right back to the phones. We've got Yvonne calling back from Metairie. Yvonne, thanks so much for calling back in.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with rose bushes. I have just recently, 2 months ago, purchased two beautiful roses, Mr. Lincoln. And when they first were in the ground, they produced gorgeous buds. But now they're coming up and they're deformed before they open. And so they don't even open all the way. They just kind of crinkle the buds themselves. The leaves are beautiful. Some a little curled, but the majority of them are pretty. So I don't know what to use on them and what's the problem.
Do the petals look burned on the edges, brown?
No, they're not brown. The foliage is pretty. There's a few.
Okay, well, the issue with the flowers, the major pest we have of flowers is a tiny insect called rose thrips. And they're usually an issue on our spring and early summer roses. And they cause the buds to be deformed, damaged. They don't open properly. But they're very characteristic. The flowers look burned. The edges of the petals are brown when it's thrips issue. What you're probably looking at more now is just heat stress. We just do not get the best roses of the year in July, August, and September. So some of them may open halfway decently. Others may not open very well at all. If there's something not attractive, you can just trim that off of the bush. But this isn't, again, I would have been worried about thrips. But based on the symptoms, thrips don't appear to be the issue. This is going to be more likely just heat stress. The flowers, they can be smaller, paler. The roses just are not happy with the heat right now. And we'll get another really outstanding blooming season. You'll cut your Mr. Lincoln roses back about halfway in late August, early September, very important pruning time. And then that will prepare the rose bushes for their glorious fall blooming season. We get outstanding roses in October, November, and early December.
Okay, well, if by some chance it has rose thrips, what could I use on it to spray it with?
Well, should you ever have a rose thrips issue, there's an insecticide called Spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, Spinosad. And you'll find it in various brands at your local nursery or garden center. You begin spraying the roses as the buds begin to show, and then spray them regularly through the blooming season to minimize that thrips damage.
Okay, and one other question, Mr. Dan. I have talked to you about this a long time back. I have a cypress trees that are not on my property. They're about 20 feet from my home. They are invasive to my property, but will they get under my foundation? They are going
The root growing conditions under home foundations are very poor, dry, low oxygen. So roots generally don't proliferate under the slab of a house the way they proliferate out in the open yard where there's rain coming down, oxygen is available. And so I wouldn't be overly concerned. Just look around at every yard in your neighborhood and every neighborhood you drive through, and you'll see large trees everywhere around people's homes. If there were issues with tree roots cracking slabs, nobody would have trees in their yard. So it's a concern people have on occasion, but it's really not something we have to be overly worried about.
Is there any way to kill the root system that's coming into
my... Oh, absolutely. Remove the trees. Yeah.
Oh, well, they're not mine.
Yeah, remove the trees. But other than that, there's just not much. You can cut the knees off. If any knees pop up, Yvonne, just dig around them, cut them off horizontally below ground level, and that way you can keep the knees from being a pest. Got to run. I got a break coming up, Yvonne. Thank you for your call. Folks, stay tuned. Have a whole other hour of the Garden Show coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.